And so we started it, and we've been doing it ever since now. So 9 years strong. Thank you, everyone, for coming out and supporting. We really, really appreciate it. Appreciate all the athletes coming out, all the Greeks that come out every year. It's awesome to see you guys supporting, so we really appreciate that. We're very honored tonight to have a keynote speaker, actually works at Penn State. Just discovered Rebecca literally last week.
Yes.
Right? So I'm going to do a little intro on her, but I don't take my glasses off to do this because I see better up close without them. So, without further ado, Rebecca Cullen is an author, storyteller, and activist. She's a member of the Speakers Bureau for the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, which is called RAIN, which for those of you, Rebecca and I were talking about this, was founded by one of my favorite singers, who none of you probably ever heard of, named Tori Amos. She was really big in the 90s. Anybody here? No, you're all going to be like, wait, no, wait, what that is. Tara's raised, she's like, yeah. So a big Tori Amos fan. She actually founded this organization. She's been trained as a New York State Rape Crisis Counselor, Man Hotlines in Central New York. She speaks on a number of feminist issues with a focus on coercion, rape, and emotional abuse. Her hope is to teach both women and men has healthier, happier relationships, and you can learn more about her and read her writing on her newly launched blog, tellingallthestories.com, where she also provides a platform and support to tell your own story. So without further ado, I'm very honored to introduce Rebecca Cullen. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here.
Of course. Well, and thank you to all of you for being here. It makes me feel so good to see people who are willing to come out, support, and stand up and be seen for this. So thank you. Thank you so much for being here. These are really important times right now. Situations that have always existed are being brought to light, and we're finally allowed to talk about them and do something to change things that we've taken as the norm, that were never normal or okay. And in the last couple of years, you know, our politicians have done some interesting things, but one of the things that has come out of some of their decisions lately is that we've opened up new conversations. And one of my favorite ones that has come out of it is this hashtag, why I didn't report. Because it wasn't such a simple idea, and people are really realizing like what rape actually looks like and what it takes to talk about it. It's a conversation we've been waiting to have. And the telling isn't so simple. You may have heard some of the reasons that are shared, the often common ones, where survivors aren't believed, or they're shamed for things that happened to them. However, a survivor of sexual assault may not even know the reason themselves that holds them back from telling. So there's a whole emotional component involved that overrides the logic of the situation. And getting to a point where you can tell your story is an emotional journey, and it can take a long time. It doesn't always happen in an easy time frame that allows attackers to be prosecuted. When I was 25, I went on a date with a man who ended our evening together by raping me. At the time, I had just moved across the country from New York to California. I just finished my master's degree, and I had a job teaching special ed. At that time, I considered myself smart, capable, and pretty bold for making a move cross-country away from everything that I'd ever known. And when I started dating in California, I had the goal of getting a boyfriend. So when I met this nice guy, clean-cut, educated, had a job in Silicon Valley as a graphic designer, I thought he was safe. I wasn't even thinking that I had to protect myself around him. He took me to his brightly lit apartment. I knew his name. And that night, I thought I had control over the decision about whether or not we were going to have sex. I didn't realize that this man considered rape an acceptable workaround for a girl who was saying no. And I didn't report. At first, I didn't even realize I'd been raped. And that might sound unbelievable, but sadly it's more common than you think. The picture that had been painted for me of what rape would look like was that you get jumped by a stranger in a dark alley, or if it's date rape, then somehow there are drugs or alcohol involved. So I wasn't looking for what actually happened to me. And to add to that, right after I'd fought him off, using my legs to launch him off of me, yelling, "I told you to stop," he turns around, he looks at me, and he says, "Oh, come on, why did you do that?" He was angry at me that I'd stopped him. And for that moment, I questioned which one of us was in the wrong. See, because I'd been raised to be a nice girl, don't hurt people's feelings. And I definitely hurt his feelings. So maybe I wasn't such a nice girl. And I didn't report. Because it didn't look like the kind of rape that I'd been taught to keep an eye out for, and I left thinking maybe I had done something wrong. And then next day, I call my best friend, and I'm still trying to work it out in my head, figure out what happened. And I call her for advice, and I tell her about this strange experience, and I'm looking for some sympathy. I'm looking for her to commiserate with me. I want her to agree with me that this guy was a jerk. And instead, she sighs and says, "Oh, Rebecca, you give it up so easily." So instead of getting confirmation that I had been wronged, I get confirmation that I'd been a slut. From another woman. So I didn't report or tell anyone else because I didn't want anyone else thinking I'd been a slut. Months later, when I finally figure out what happened to me, it was because I remembered how I'd said no again and again throughout the evening, probably 20 times or more, and he still pushed forward with having sex with me. When I remembered how I'd had to struggle and fight with him to get him to stop, I realized that this was not sex I'd consented to, and I was actively trying to prevent this. Then I had the right word for it. Rape. I hadn't been a slut. I'd been raped. And then I was really faced with the decision to report it or not. And when I'd heard about this happening to other women, I thought that if this ever happened to me, I would bring down the house around my attacker and I would make sure that he was punished. And now that it was me, I found this decision to be more confusing than I'd ever imagined. I could picture what would happen if I went to the police and the questions I knew they'd ask. Why did you go home with him? Well, why did you kiss him? Are you sure you were raped? And then, if it happened to make it to court, I could even picture his surprised face to realize that I considered what happened to me rape. I knew that he thought he was just doing what a guy needed to do to get laid. And I had no proof that it happened months ago. No one would believe me, and I knew this. And by that time, I had found the boyfriend I'd been looking for. He was a nice guy, called himself a feminist, an activist. And when I'd figured out what had happened, I tried to tell him about it, and he told me that he didn't want to hear my story because it would make him angry. So I didn't know where to take my story. I didn't know who would want to hear it. I felt like there was nothing I could do about it, so it was best to forget about it. And I worked hard to diminish it in my mind and tell myself it didn't matter. And I tried to push it away for about a decade, but it always came back to me. And I couldn't push it away, and I shouldn't have had to. The one thing the health class pamphlets had gotten right about my situation was that I had said no, and I clung to that to understand what had happened to me. But sometimes you don't get the chance to say no. And it's hard to understand how this is not your fault. If I'd heard more stories that looked like mine at the time, then maybe I would have figured out what had happened sooner and understand my options. But even if I had, I can't say that I would have handled it any differently. Even after 15 years and having done lots of healing work around my experience, it's still a hard story to tell. Rape is already trauma. And then the telling can be a whole other kind of trauma. And the possibility of being shamed or not believed is only one possible outcome of telling. There are so many more factors that make this hard because it's not just a physical trauma, but an emotional one. And as humans, we're not so good at handling strong emotions. Ironically, though, this is what we do that makes us human. We feel things. But still, so often, people will do whatever they can to avoid facing emotional stress, whether it's telling a hard story or having to listen to a hard story. So when you tell your story, you might find that the listener will try to make their discomfort over hearing your story easier on themselves by making your pain harder on you. They're not bad people. It's not that they don't care about you. They're just trying to manage their own discomfort. Because we're not really naturally great listeners. It's a skill that we need to cultivate. You might find well-meaning people saying things to diminish or deflect your experience, like, oh, it's not that bad. It happens to a lot of people. Or they'll try and become the hero of your experience and dispense advice. Oh, buck up, you know, the sun will come out tomorrow. It'll be okay, you'll get through this. And they may even try to relate their own experience, which sounds nice, it is. But it can still take away from you getting to tell yours. Or they may ignore that you said anything and change the subject. Telling is so hard because the listening can be hard too. For myself, after I'd done a lot of healing and I knew as deep as I could understand it that this was not my fault, this was not something I'd chosen, it was then pity that I was afraid of. Pity kept me quiet. Pity feels like a heavy, wet, dirty blanket, and I can't stand pity. And the idea that I might be pitied kept me from telling. I thought I'd be in this box where now I'd be seen as broken, flawed somehow, weak, as if I'd always been this person and getting raped was the inevitable consequence of being me. Pity felt like there was something wrong with me. And it wasn't true, of course. It's never true. But when somebody responds to your story with pity, that's what it can feel like. And the way something feels always trumps any rationalizing that we do in our head to tell ourselves what the truth actually is. The feeling is always stronger than the logic. So keeping quiet can feel like the safer option for so many reasons. You were already hurt once. Why would you risk opening your mouth to possibly be hurt again? Getting to a point emotionally where you can tell your story is a huge milestone in healing. Because we're taking another kind of risk to be that vulnerable. As humans, we spend our lives trying to appear strong to others. In the end, it's when we're vulnerable that we show our true strength. And the secrets are what kept us weak. We are all human, having human emotions, doing confusing human things, hurting the way humans do. And when we admit our humanness, other people get to relax and sigh with us and, oh, we're human too, we hurt too. But vulnerability requires great bravery and strength because it requires you to be exposed. You allow yourself to be seen. To be vulnerable, you need to be real. And in order for the cultural phenomenon of rape to change, we need more real people strong enough to be vulnerable. And when people get to know you, when you're vulnerable, then they also have more reasons to love you. And if you're on the listener side, hearing someone open up about their experience, there's a few things you can do to support. First of all, you don't want to push them to talk about it. This is their story, and they can do what they want to with it. And keep in mind, too, that there are two traumas that you're witnessing here. The original traumatic event, and then everything this person had to go through to get to a point where they could tell their story. You're witnessing a miracle. This person has sat in the uncomfortableness of pain and shame and fear and pushed past all that to talk about it. And your job as the listener is just to listen. There's nothing to be fixed here. This person wants to be heard, and you honor them enough by bearing witness to their brave vulnerability and raw humanness. And when they're done, you can say, thank you for sharing. And if you're struggling with telling your story, that's okay. It takes the time it takes. I thought for a long time I would take mine to the grave, but here I am. and I wish this was easy. I wish this was a perfect world where we could go to the cops, be believed, and have telling be a comfortable, simple experience that doesn't heap upon us a new trauma over the original one. I wish that this was a perfect world where rape didn't happen at all. And I believe that we start to create that world when we tell our stories. Sexual assault stops when we keep painting the pictures of what it looked like for us so that others know the different faces that it can wear, so that everyone will know that trying to convince or coerce someone to do something that they don't want to do is just as much rape as jumping someone in a dark alley. That is the true power of our stories. It's the end of rape. And that is your power when you're ready for it. For myself, I'm compelled to talk about it. I got to a point in my healing where telling became the natural result of my experience, and I knew that I could no longer stay quiet and be happy with my life. Eventually, also, my rage over the fact that rape happens at all to anyone, let alone that it happened to me, finally outweighed the fear that kept me quiet. And I'm terrified to be up here. However, I believe in using my gifts to affect the world, and my gift is my voice. I can talk about the hard things. I want to talk about the hard things so that it's easier for others. And when you tell your story, you make it easier for others as well. And you don't have to be in the same place as me. I mean, there's not so many people who want to speak in front of crowds, let alone talk about their personal trauma in front of crowds. But my hope for you is that you can get to a place where you can tell someone. Find someone who feels safe and let yourself be seen, because you deserve to be seen and you deserve to be loved. And in the meantime, as you work your way through to the point where you're ready to talk, just know that we're here for you and we want to hear your story. And we love you already. And you're not alone. Thank you.